Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by George Finney, Information Security Officer at Southern Methodist University. The session is entitled Network Admission Control, a Survey of Approaches.
Well, thank you guys so much for being here. Can everybody hear me? Great. As Dana said, we at SMU, we just finished our network admission control project. I guess our project was to do a review of the top vendors in the industry. And this is really the story of the process of seeing what all was out there. And we kind of, condensed it down into, seven approaches that we saw vendors taking. The first thing that we ran into was, the problem that everybody's doing NAC, but no one, everyone has a different definition. I'd like to start out with what you guys think NAC is. So this will be the audience participation segment of the presentation. If I could get a few people to raise their hands and tell me what they think this is. Not related to NAC, just what do you think that's a picture of?
Four people sitting at a table.
Okay, we've got four people sitting at a table. Anyone else? That's exactly right. It's a bear climbing a tree. As you can tell, lots of people could have different perspective on what it might be. It might be four people sitting around a conference room table. It could be a polar bear climbing a tree. I made the little spots blue there because it's a polar bear. And that's what we ran into with NAC. We'd sat down with a lot of vendors, and they would start their presentations, we had kind of our perspective of what we thought we were going to do with NAC. We had NAC in-house already historically we used NetReg at SMU, and so we knew what we wanted to get out of NAC, and they were presenting us with things that were kind of beyond what we thought NAC could do, or what we wanted to do with NAC, but that gave us opportunities, but it also presented challenges of really comparing apples to apples when we looked at the vendors. Just a little background. We had been a NetReg shop. We used NetReg for wired and wireless access. In 2004, we decided, we had to do an upgrade of the NetReg system, we instead of going through NetReg again and recompiling, and kind of customizing it to the way we wanted to run it, we looked at incorporating the University of Connecticut's package to extend NetReg, and we decided that just was too much work. Our in-house Munich experience really wasn't what we needed to really do the install the way that we needed to do it. So we decided to go with a commercial solution. And I'm not here to push one vendor over the other. I will say that ultimately we did select Bradford Networks. They're a great company. We love working with them. But I'm going to show you lots of different vendor approaches here. In 2004, we did select Bradford. In 2007, we began the process again because we had, as a university, found that we needed to have some strategic objectives for IT security. What we did is the board approved five strategic objectives. One of them was NAC. Another one was what we call our zone network architecture. And if you're not familiar with the concept of a zoned network architecture, really you can just boil it down and say there are different levels of trust. or different zones. So for example, you know, printers might be one zone, or financial officers for university might be on a different zone because of the level of access and the level of protection that they require. That was one of them, and that was one of the reasons that one of the goals that drove our adoption of network access control, not just in the dorms, which a lot of universities do, but the 2007 goal was to push NAC out to all of the buildings on campus, administrative as well as academic. So I guess the next step was to get a definition. So we formed a committee, a steering committee, and we came up with a definition of what we thought NAC was. We defined some use cases, the way we thought NAC was going to be used, not just in the dorms, but by faculty and staff. And then we created a questionnaire that we sent out to all the vendors. It's a pretty comprehensive questionnaire. And by the way, all these slides are already up on the EDUCAUSE website, as well as the questionnaire we created, the matrix. And I'll show you some screenshots of those, but those are already on the site. We also created a use case template. So if you guys are in the process of reviewing vendors that are out there, or you know, starting to implement NAC, hopefully there'll be some resources up there for you. So we assembled the questionnaires into a matrix, and then we went through the process of whittling down that number to a short list of vendors, and then we scheduled demos, we did on-sites, and then we did evals. So our definition, and I'll read this to you. I don't like reading slides, but just for your benefit, network access control is a system that ensures each person and device connecting to the university network is in compliance with the security requirements of the zone being entered or ascending to. The NAC system, in concert with the university's security zone architecture, ensures appropriate accountability, authentication and authorization for the individual connecting to the university network, and appropriate levels of protection for all other users and assets already on the university network and the internet. So there are sub-definitions for things like system and architecture, but that's the definition that we all agreed on. And you guys might come to a different definition, but hopefully that's a benefit if you're just getting started. Here are the screenshots that I showed you. The one on the left is the questionnaire. It's actually, I think, 3 or 4 pages long. And the NAC matrix itself is probably, I think, 10 or 11 pages long. We highlighted some of the items in green, the list pricing. I've actually taken out, partly because it's just old. You know, we did this review in 2007. So I didn't want to, you know, mislead anyone. I know products have changed over time. Also took out the educational discounts and, you know, some other fields. I think the thing to take away from the NAC matrix, you know, there are two questions that I found especially helpful as I was interviewing vendors. The first question was, how many developers do you have working on your product? And I think that's going to be of particular importance now as we're looking at cutbacks in the educational field, you know, because of the way the economy is. And I think a lot of vendors, not just NAC vendors, but all kinds of vendors are going to be looking at cutbacks because of cutbacks in spending. So I think that number is going to be key as we move forward. The other number that I found most helpful is the number of higher ed customers that your product currently works with. So you know, in talking to these vendors, they may have had, you know, several hundred customers in NAC, but only maybe, you know, 10, 20, 30 high-ed customers, and that really made a difference to us. You know, we're on a couple of mailing lists, the ResNet mailing list, and also I mentioned Bradford. They have, I think they said 500 customers now just in higher ed. And the mailing list alone are extremely busy. We get a lot of great information out of that, and I think that's one of the selling points that might not be, you know, as apparent, you know, if you go into discussions with a vendor. So definitely ask those two questions, and hopefully these resources will be of some benefit to you. So I mentioned use cases. We sat down and started talking about how our faculty and staff were going to be using the machine. So it might be the case that they're a faculty person is just sitting in their office. It might also be the case that they have a laptop in their office and they're using wireless. So they may be using wired or wireless, and we're going to give them different trust permissions based on that access. They might also be at home. SMU still offers dial-up to all of our community. So we treat dial-up differently from VPN, for example. Then we have student wireless users, not just in the dorms, but all over campus, wired users. And one of the important things that we found, there were some students that were coming to campus who didn't have administrative rights on their computers. That was extremely important because, maybe mom or dad, only gave them certain rights so they can install programs or, they can't do different things. I think the intent really is, if there's an IT savvy, dad, I think they're disabling rights so they can't, break their computer so much so he doesn't have to go fix it. So some of the vendors that we found required administrative rights to make the changes, to run patches or that kind of thing. So that's definitely one of the questions on our matrix that was a highlight. We also found for our executive education programs, for example, there were company-owned laptops, and the companies had policies on what they could or could not install. We would like to install a permanent agent because we get a lot of value out of that. But for students, that's not going to be, especially with company-owned laptops, that may not be permissible. And then finally, we looked at users with no SMU credentials. So folks that come just into the library to access some public resources. That's not the exhaustive list of use cases for NAC, but that kind of starts to give you a flavor of the directions you should be asking of your vendors when you get them in. You can't, especially if you're going to do a campus-wide implementation, you really have to think about your entire audience. So the requirements for NAC, we developed a list of, I guess, must-have features and then a list of nice-to-have features. We decided up front that we were going to go with an out-of-band solution, which limited several of the vendors. At SMU, we started out with Nortel, HP, Ungerman Bass, Hubs, in our dorms, so we had a very diverse environment. So a particular solution that only was for, say, one vendor, I won't mention any names, but that wasn't going to work for us. I will say, however, that some vendors really only look at your core equipment, so vendor neutrality there isn't that important of a consideration. So, if you only have Cisco in your core, only pointing NAC at your core, well, that's not going to make much of a difference to you. But we did have a different wireless setup. We use Aruba Networks for our wireless. So that again, another step in vendor neutrality. VPN, again, we had a different VPN provider. And we really needed to support single sign-on. We didn't want people going through one wireless web page where they signed on, and then the NAC web page where they signed on again, and then another NAC web page to sign on again. It had to support Windows XP and Vista, as well as Mac OS and Linux. We saw some vendors that were doing support for PDAs. We decided to not make that a requirement, but that was a nice to have. As we went through this process in 2007, there were still a lot of vendors out there that didn't even support Vista. I think that's probably changed in the last year, but again, that's something you should ask up front. We really needed the ability to provide guest logons. If you don't have SMU credentials, we still want you to be able to get on the network. That was a requirement. we need a distributed administration because, as I think a lot of universities, we don't have centralized management of the IT resources. So, for example, our law school or our business school, we definitely needed the ability, if we're going to push this campus-wide, to have everyone be able to log in and manage the system, but manage their own portions of the system and not have full access. For forensic reasons, we wanted the ability to go historically and find out when users had been connecting to the network, where they were at on the network. I guess search capabilities became a really important consideration as we looked at vendor feature sets. Some vendors didn't have the ability to search by MAC address, for example, or search by IP address. So, I mean, it was really shocking that, you know, you couldn't do basic searches, and that was a huge consideration for us. It actually eliminated quite a few vendors. I think the policy enforcement, that's actually a standard piece. So, for the most part, most vendors had all of the major AV vendors, and that actually was pretty standard across the board. Our additional features, the nice-to-haves, we have a wiring database at SMU, so we've got about 25 dorms and frats that we monitor. And so built into the NAC system, you know, when we found a user, we found where what their health was. We'd also be able to see what port they were connected to, and that helps with just basic troubleshooting. So when they call into the help desk and they report, you know, a bad network connection, we can go out and find where that is, or, you know, make notes about whether we've been having issues with that particular connection, maybe replace the wiring or move it to another port on the switch if it's a bad port. We've got an IDP, we've got the packet shaper. Integrating with those two are really huge for us. I think the University of Michigan has just introduced this new project. It's called Bayou, which is, a custom packet shaper Bradford integration that allows them to send messages to students once per day when they notice that they're downloading to kind of raise awareness about peer-to-peer file sharing. A lot of students, with things like LimeWire, they don't know, they try to uninstall it. They don't know that it comes right back, and so, the downloads are still there. So it's kind of raising awareness, but that's another nice feature that's done with NAC. I mentioned historical information for forensics. One thing that we found to be a big eliminator of vendors is there was no integration with Active Directory for our administrator logons. So, especially if you have a distributed environment where maybe you've got someone at the circulation desk of the library, providing guest logons to users, you don't want all the librarians to have the same logon, and you don't want to have you want to meet your password standards. So we use Active Directory, and we decided that wasn't necessarily a requirement, but it's a nice to have. I also mentioned library circulation desk folks. Another nice to have was being able to have a separate page, maybe a pared down page, where a librarian can take down some custom information and maybe a driver's license or something that's not necessarily PI that we're going to have to worry about, keeping track of, but at least something so, if we find later that there was some kind of incident on a library public access machine, we can still kind of come back and provide some information about that. It was surprising that so much detailed reporting wasn't available. And finally, web portal customization. Some of the vendors require that you make your own web pages outside of the NAC system and then upload it to the system, log on with SSH. And for us, that was kind of a pain point because our user services team was making those web pages, was determining when we needed to upgrade our NAC definitions or our antivirus definitions. So having that web portal customization within the web interface was a real plus. So here's the landscape. We actually reviewed the top 20 vendors, and that's based on Gartner and Computer World and some of the other magazines. And we found several others that weren't on those, on Gartner. But we did find we heard about them through other means, and so we included them in the list. Some were pretty new. I think HP was pretty new as far as their offering goes. I think they just opened it up in August of 2007. So they were pretty new on our list, but we included them anyway. So I'm about to go through the NAC vendors scenarios of, and I'll say first that there are seven categories that I'm going to go over, but every NAC vendor, every great NAC vendor that we've found could do two or more of those approaches. And we really appreciated that because some of the flexibility we require for, say, faculty and staff users really doesn't apply to students. So with students, our implementation didn't involve a persistent agent. But with faculty and staff, we think that's the approach that we're going to go with. I'll also say that we're still in the process of implementing. We've chosen the vendor, but we're going through the process. One of the requirements is DHCP. So some universities haven't moved to DHCP yet. We're actually one of them for our administrative and academic buildings. So we're kind of having to go ahead and implement DHCP before we implement NAC because there's some settings that need to get changed. We push that persistent agent via group policy or a web page. And so, but the ability to move between VLANs that we're going to talk about with the approach we used requires DHCP. So that's something to keep in mind. If you're considering NAC, you might want to consider or evaluate whether you have the DHCP infrastructure to provide that. So the NAC approaches, there are basically two approaches we found. There's inline and then there's out of band. As I said before, we decided to go out of band first because we get more options as to the approach we can take. The second thing I think is, and the bigger thing is the cost factor. I think it was going to cost too much to be in line, and it was going to not be as scalable. So in the next slide, one method of inline the vendor that comes to mind is Concentry, I believe. They have an approach where you replace your switches at the edge with NAC appliances, and that gave you the most, granular method of dealing with traffic. So you can stop traffic before it gets on your network. One of the advantages to that is, for dorm-to-dorm traffic, some of that, if you're doing it at any kind of monitoring at the core or at the edge or with an IDS or IDP, dorm-to-dorm traffic doesn't get stopped. This has that advantage. Obviously, the con is you have to replace all your switches with NAC switches, and unless you're in the process of upgrading all your dorm switches, that's probably not an option. One of the other pros is that it's an agentless solution, so you don't have to install anything on end user machines, and so that was a big plus, but again, not enough of a plus to get us to select the switch replacement. The more familiar inline solution is the uplink aggregation. So we've already got several devices inline. So for example, our packet shaper or firewalls or IDS or IDPs. I said before that this isn't a scalable solution. So right now, in the core, we're gig from our dorm router to our core router. So, you know, in the near future, we can, you know, I can see us going to a 10 gig link, and that means that we're going to have to upgrade every appliance along that. So the packet shaper has to get upgraded, the firewall, the IDS, the IDP, and if we were to put a NAC appliance in line, that's another cost. And you know, I can't even imagine the cost of a 10 gig NAC appliance at this point. So we eliminated that solution. The next one is actually the one we chose. So the SNMP management, one of the behaviors of a switch is when a user comes online, when they turn on their computer, you get your switch can send a link up trap via SNMP out of band to a NAC appliance, or I guess in band. We have an out of band network, so that's definitely helpful for us. So the advantage is it's out of line, so there's no extra cost. You know, it takes advantage of our infrastructure that was in place already. It can make VLAN changes, so the switches can move users from, say, a quarantine VLAN to a production VLAN, or you know, just a registration VLAN. That's helpful going back to our zoned architecture. So if a user sits down at a particular port, say that user is a financial officer, that user can get moved into the financial officer VLAN. If, you know, an hour later that user gets up and a student comes in and plugs into that same port, that port can get moved into the appropriate zone, you know, be it a student or, say, a graduate student who has a certain different level of access. One of the cons there is actually, you know, if you have too many VLANs, you have to have all your VLANs on every switch so that can be accommodated. Another issue, and this isn't that big an issue these days, but SNMP packets can be dropped. One of the other catches that we found is changes that are being made to switches by SNMP aren't logged. So consequently, your accounting, you know, that you have typically with multiple network administrators doesn't get done because those changes are being made, and you know, the switches just kind of go with the flow. And I'll caveat that by saying, you know, we're using SNMP v2, I think v3 might be a little different. So the permanent agent is a little different. The permanent agent has to get installed on each end user device. And we like that scenario for faculty and staff because you can do more with that. You can you have it always on. There's not this process of you know, selecting, well, register once a day or once a week. It's always there. It's always checking. The difficult part with the permanent agent is actually figuring out how you get that on that the computer, the client machine, or the laptop in the first place. So, you know, do you get that with group policy? Do you make them go to a web page and download that? How do you ensure that the permanent agent gets deployed? Especially for users like students who, in our network, aren't on the domain. So we decided we're going to deploy this for faculty and staff, not for students. The nice part about this, one of the vendors, you can imagine who, has an integrated NAC client with their antivirus agent. So it's all in one. It's all bundled there. You get that when you buy the antivirus, and I think it's just a licensing deal to turn that on. The disadvantage of that is it doesn't offer the ability to change VLAN. So in my scenario where you have, say, a financial officer come along, that port is always going to be in the same VLAN. So the next user comes along, say it's a student who doesn't have a permanent agent, that's no good. It's also not a good fit for things like printers or scanners or cash registers. So you definitely need to find a solution that is flexible enough. So the solution we chose offers a combination of the first out of band, the SNMP agent, and then the permanent agent. So we definitely liked that flexibility. One of the more innovative solutions we found was a traffic monitoring solution. So I think this was unique to just a couple of vendors. I think Fortinet was one of them, and we really like this. The idea is either the NAC appliance listens to, say, a NetFlow or an SFlow session coming from the router, or it could just take a mirror port and listen to all the traffic. The idea is, you know, it listens for any kind of registration data, so any kind of LDAP queries, it'll pick up on your Active Directory accounts and start to profile that and then make router policy changes via ACLs kind of on the fly. So if it sees the advantage of this is it's kind of a, I guess, a hybrid of the IDS-IDP solution where it's not only listening, but it's out of band, and it can make changes on the fly to the router, which we thought was really innovative. And again, some of the vendors combine this with, say, an SNMP switch integration, where it could also make changes out on the switch, so it could change VLANs based on what it was listening to from the router port. So very powerful tool. We decided that we weren't going to go with it. We were just concerned a little with, I guess, first, the cost. Second, what happens if, you know, you drop packets via SFlow, or, you know, you've got a mirror port, the router gets busy and it doesn't give you all the traffic. What if there's too much traffic to be mirrored? So there were still some concerns. It's a fairly new approach, but I think it's an approach that more vendors will start to take a serious look at. One of the other disadvantages to that was that we were also concerned that it really complicated the router configuration. Again, tracking, auditing, accounting for router changes is very important to us, and especially with the amount of traffic we have, we were concerned that there would be too many changes on the router with the traffic monitoring. A lot of vendors now are also doing 802.1x management of switches. We found that it was actually going to be very complex and difficult to install on the wired side. We've already implemented 802.1x on the wireless side, and we've learned our lessons there. You know, one of the big benefits, we put a batch script in to help configure student machines that use 802.1x. But the wired side, we decided that we weren't going to be that ambitious. The idea is the switch sees a .1x packet. If you're not familiar with 802.1x, it talks to Radius. It gets that information back. That information is sent through the NAC appliance, and then either it makes a change on the router, the switch, or it makes a change to a permanent agent that's on the machines. There's several different vendor approaches. I don't think there's a standard approach to doing wired side switch 802.1x with NAC. So we were kind of a little hesitant, but there were some good approaches out there. We still like that, and I think that has a lot of merit as we go forward. The big con for us was it required some kind of monitoring agent to be installed on our Active Directory servers, and we really just weren't comfortable with that at this point. And I think your university may be different, but from a logistics perspective, our networking group is separate from our systems group, so coordinating the communications with networking and systems to get an agent installed on the Active Directory servers was going to be an additional challenge on top of all the other complexity that we're adding. So again, we limited those vendors that could only do .1x radius. And the final approach that we've seen is actually another fairly innovative approach. The vendors would install an ARP agent on the individual machines. ARP really just stands for Address Resolution Protocol. So there's a hardware address built into your NIC, your network interface card, and that hardware address gets mapped to your IP address. So one of the things that happens on behind the scenes on your desktop is your computer will build a table of ARP entries, and so will the switch, and so will the router. What the ARP agent does is for all the machines on a particular VLAN, the ARP agent will, send messages to a new machine that's on the network and redirect that to the NAC appliance for registration purposes. So any ARP address that gets asked for, so any IP address that gets asked for by a new machine on the network, that machine could potentially be inundated with ARP requests redirecting them to the NAC appliance. And the idea is, since the local machine is a little bit closer than the router, those address requests will get to the new machine first. So it's kind of an interesting approach. The definite advantage is there are no agents to install on new computers on the network. The con is that you have to have an agent on every VLAN that you want to monitor.
Yes, actually, he asked if you're providing any remote resources.
We also felt like that approach was a little bit invasive, and being in an academic environment, we were concerned about how that would be perceived if we're attacking client machines with address requests. All this information is up on the website, the vendor matrix, the questionnaire, the use case templates, and the presentations. We can take 5-10 minutes to answer questions. Shoot. So the question is whether, if you use persistent agent for the students in the dorms, whether that would prevent you from a student from taking their laptop from the dorms to another network, like in the library. So that's a good question. I think the answer is if you decide to use persistent agent for both dorms and academic buildings, there's nothing that would prevent that. Logistically, we just decided that we weren't going to try and push out persistent agent to students. So that was really just a logistical choice on our part, and not a feature limitation. But yes, so in answer to your question, with the persistent agent, you can definitely move from one VLAN to the other. Other questions?
Yes, he's asking about looking at how
the question is, did we decide on something other than Bradford? And so the answer is yes. We had a short list of 3 vendors. We actually did an in-house eval of Mirage, Bradford, and I can't remember the third one. It's escaping me at this point. Not to try and endorse Bradford at all. Our decision was based on kind of a number of factors. Since we used Aruba networks, Bradford has a very close relationship with Aruba. That was definitely a deciding factor. The number of customers they have, over 500 high ed customers, definitely gave us a sense of comfort. A lot of the other, about 90% of the other vendors had less than I think 50 customers in 2007. So we felt like that was different comfort. We'd had them in house, so there was a comfort level already. There was no retraining for our help desk folks. Mirage definitely had a great solution. Fortinet, I think Fortinet was the third vendor. They had a fantastic solution And I think the price on both of those was a little too high. We were very excited by the technology, but the price point and the features definitely spoke well for Bradford. So the question is, have we experienced an outage on the network or the NAC appliance itself? So if we have experienced some brief outages, say where we have to upgrade the device, or maybe we have to reboot for some reason, there's not been a hardware failure or anything like that. The advantage of I think most of the out-of-band solutions is that when the NAC box goes away, or if the NAC box goes away, hopefully it doesn't go away, if the NAC box goes away, it's out-of-band, so it's not preventing any new connections from being established. The catch is, with the approach we took with the VLAN changing, if a user is still on the registration VLAN and the box goes away, there's no way for them to register. So you have to have a way of, if there's no DHCP, if there's no, web for them, they're kind of stuck in that. The good news is that's generally a small number of users, and with a reboot, it might take, 5 minutes to get a box back up. So it hasn't been that big an issue. For other approaches, the NAC out-of-band approaches, the NAC box going away, say on an 802.1x, there's a failover authentication method usually, and there's not a problem. But good question. Good question. The question is, if we have some kind of mitigation point or some kind of resource for students. Initially, when we implemented NAC several years ago, we had, a site license for our antivirus. So we had our website. The students go to the website and just download their antivirus software. So any new definition updates we'd put up on the website. And that worked really well. We moved away from that model where we had a site license. Partly the issue was a lot of our students wanted to stay with Norton. They didn't want to go with whatever antivirus we were pushing on them. And while that was just a handful of users, they were pretty vocal. And so we decided, well, let's open it up. Let's let them have access to whatever antivirus we want, so long as it's a real antivirus, not something that is kind of fly by night. The mitigation point, we don't have a resource for them now. One of the features that Bradford had that we really liked, it has kind of a pass through, so we can select certain antivirus vendors. So say Norton or McAfee or Sophos or whoever, or Microsoft even. We type those URLs into a whitelist, and it lets traffic flow just to those sites. So if you need a Microsoft patch, if you need a DAT file update, it lets you go out and talk to those select sites. So you don't need to have a patch server, you don't need to have a proxy server like you've had to have in the past. So we felt like that was a great kind of advancement. But other resources do. You have to have a patch server. You have to have a sus server to get your patches from. You have to have a proxy to get you off the registration VLAN out to the real world. So we were prepared to do that, because we knew the situation. But we were able to find a solution that didn't force us to do that. That's a great question. We have about 2,000 students in our dorms, and I would say that we have probably 400 to 500 different Xboxes, or, you know, we've got students with TiVos, we've got students with PlayStations or Wiis or what have you. So some solutions provided a manual process where you could have the student call the help desk, and typically you'd put on your web page, if you do have an Xbox, call us and we'll get you on. So some had manual registration, some had self-help. So on that same page where they register, it has a link that says if you have an Xbox or whatever, it walks you through the process of finding your MAC address, finding your IP address on that machine, and then giving it through that web page on your PC. Other devices, Bradford supports all of these actually. Other vendors actually could find whether it was an Xbox based on its MAC address. So the vendor code on the MAC address, they figured out, and that they're just going to automatically put them into a device. And so the same thing holds true for printers. You can input your printer vendor ID of your MAC address and go ahead and have all your printers just preloaded into your printer VLAN or whatever VLAN you want to put them in. Good question. So the question is, have we had any users putting in static IP addresses? And I will say we haven't found any. we've definitely had suspicions that some folks were doing that. We've stumbled upon them because we get other students that are set up for DHCP that have been registered, who are being handed a DHCP address, and they get an IP address conflict. So we've kind of presumed that that's probably the case. Someone has figured out our system, and the good news is NAC still works in this scenario, because even if they've given themselves a static IP address, if they haven't registered once, they're going to get moved to the registration VLAN. And if they're on the registration VLAN and they have a static IP address, they're not going to work at all. So they're forced to register, and they're forced to re-register, I think, now either monthly or weekly. So if they decided to go that route, they'd get redirected. But that's a good question. The other question that you didn't ask is, do students have routers in their dorm rooms? And the answer is yes. Do we have a policy against that? The answer is yes. Do they do it anyway? Of course they do. One of the nice to have features that we looked for is rogue detection. So if you've ever seen a student plug their router in backwards, so that they're serving DHCP out to the whole VLAN, which in our case is the whole dorm, you find out pretty quick that the students aren't getting on the network. What's happening? We found some students that plug one WAN link into their from their router into the network, and then they plug another non WAN link into the other port. They're serving wireless to all the students around them. And it's getting on they're actually getting on the network because the wireless users are being redirected through the regular port. So you definitely need a solution that has rogue detection. One of the things that some of the solutions could do is they would have a VLAN tag port that they would change tags, and you would list all the VLANs that you want to search for rogue detection, and it would change the VLAN to go be on each port and then listen for DHCP, or it would ask for DHCP requests, and if it found some, it would then take that MAC address of the router that it got back and correlate that with a known user, and help you track that down. But that's definitely, we see that probably once a semester, and that's something, you might look out for. Other questions? Well, thank you very much.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.